This is Brian.
This is Hari.
And this is Packy from the past.
From iFi Dragons, and you're listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
WGN.
Yay, yay!
And you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound what?
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
2, 3, 4.
When you sit on the train, are you hit by the way that the city lights around you? Late at night when you ride, do you look outside? Do you see it bright like I do? All the people, the places, the city faces, they all take me in. All around, all the lost, all the found, all the everything and every instant.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Michael.
And this is Kevin.
And welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions. Now, Kevin, there's a lot of great bands in Chicago, obviously.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I stumbled across this great chiptune band, which you don't really see a lot of in the city of Chicago. Welcome to the show, iFi Dragons. What's going on, guys?
Hey,
thank
hey.
You.
Hey,
thanks
hey.
For having us.
Yeah, thanks.
You've got your first show in a little bit happening on December 30th at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. What's going on with that? Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah,
welcome
yeah.
back to the team.
Thank you. Thank you. We've been in our collective Bat Cave.
Yeah.
And fell asleep in the Bat Cave. It's sort of a Rip Van Winkle situation. Batman Rip Van Winkle. It's an interesting crossover special.
Batman Winkle?
Batman Winkle. One of my favorite Adam West episodes.
He had to get the mask modified.
Such a weird concept. So,
for sleep apnea? Or?
So you were on a bit of a hiatus, kind of?
Yeah. I mean, not so. We were just actually talking before. So we had done our last album, The Near Future. We had done a Kickstarter to raise money for it, and then it ended up being kind of a two-year saga for us to complete it, kind of culminating in a big show at Lincoln Hall to release it, which was actually our last big show there. We were definitely kind of worn out, and it took a little while to recuperate. But we've been, you know, working on some new stuff, got some new songs, and hopefully some plans for the new year as well.
Awesome. And you know, that song that you played before, the Chicago song, is that kind of a newer song that you're going to be showcasing at the show?
We'll be playing that one for sure. But that's on the near future. So that's the latest record.
That's got like My City Ballad written all over it. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
I can see that playing at Meggie Daily Park in the next few years.
Maybe. <Nice. laughs> So let's talk about the hiatus. So you said it was a Kickstarter campaign, but then we kind of brought up off of the air, if you will, life, balancing life and sure. passions at the same time. So was that kind of an aspect of it too, a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so... You know, our story is very typical in the, you know, the good old, we did the label thing for a few years and sure. had the, like, almost stereotypical, would you say?
It was the same story that you could tell the story and you don't even know
you
it.
You could change out the band name.
It was the kind of thing that going into it, for me at least, getting into the major label, big, bad industry ringer, I was like, I know how the story's going to go, but I feel like I need to live it for myself. I feel like it's the rite of passage, sure. the rock and roll rite of passage to go through that struggle, and that with its successes and with its joys.
We got to do a lot of cool things.
Gigantic life
yeah.
moments.
Cool yeah, big life moments. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, so coming then off of that, was when we did the Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and as much as that was a great success, there's a reason that. You're not supposed to just give the band a pile of money. They don't know what to do with it. So we just kept piling it into more crazy shit we would do.
What are you talking about? Van Halen had a pile of money and they turned out fine. There were no disputes or anything like that.
Well, and ironically, the funny thing is we didn't even keep a dollar. Like, quite the opposite. We ended up way overspending somehow.
It's easier if the pile of money is followed up with an equally large pile of cocaine, which we did not raise on Kickstarter.
No, they don't.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I don't think they have a PayPal for that yet. And so yeah, they don't, like, yeah. put it in your account.
On the bright side, though, this vinyl is so souped up. Like, it'll tell you it'll tell you the weather outside. You have it shut your lights off when you leave and when you're coming back and be like, album, turn lights on.
Yeah, we made this like ridiculously crazy triple gatefold thing with a very graphic cool. novel that comes with it and all this stuff.
The poster, yeah. Yeah, it's really,
like,
really
glow
epic
and
packaging.
The fluorescent mixed vinyl, like 180 gram.
Now, had you guys done vinyl before?
No, this is our first.
And it was so obnoxious what we did with the vinyl that the pressing plant doesn't even offer the option that we took on anymore. Because they're like, this is too ridiculous.
So we'll talk about that. Because I've pressed vinyl myself before, and I've learned, like, going through that process, you kind of have to write to vinyl. Like, you can't squeeze too much music on one side.
Oh, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Were you guys able, like, to find that balance?
It was a consideration we had to take because we knew that we were going to be pressing it on vinyl.
Yeah.
So the first half of the record is it's a song cycle. It's a Rush 2112-esque full side length kind of song cycle story thing. And we did have to kind of keep in mind the restrictions, you know, 19 to 22 minutes tops on a side kind of thing, and how we wanted to make that all connect. And that definitely influenced some of our decisions, for sure. I would say that sonically, I don't think we felt like we needed to take too many considerations. We're a band that definitely exists in the post-vinyl era as far as how we sound and the things that we do and the amount of information that we like to cram in that waveform.
There's still compression.
Yeah. Plenty of it. I still think it came up pretty well on the vinyl, all things considered, because it was still mastered very well. Basically anything that's, as long as you have something good going into it and you're not doing too many crazy things sonically, especially with the low end, because that can throw off vinyl like all crazy. So
absolutely. Yeah, you know, we're here with Packy, Brian, and Hari
from I Fight
Dragons.
Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say.
These schmoes.
Well, the collective
Do the
group
ding.
I Fight Dragons.
Do the ding. Ding.
It's like a really lame...
You should do that to interrupt me anytime I start getting too technical about vinyl cutting.
Well, no, that's good. We
like
it.
That's vinyl actually has a good thread through a lot of our shows here on Sound Sessions. Yeah. What do you guys think about the resurgence of vinyl? Why is this like a new thing that's happening with music? I mean, it's not by any means new, but you see a lot of these bands that are focusing on their vinyl albums, and yet... You know, is it becoming more of a collection piece, or do you think that people are just finding their love for it again, kind of like I said, the resurgence?
Yeah.
Who wants to take this?
I was going
to
say, we've talked a ton about this. Even so, when we did The Near Future, even when we were just doing our Kickstarter and the album was still sort of a half-baked idea, it started with the idea that we want to make this vinyl where the first side is sort of a song cycle designed to be the length of a side of vinyl and all this stuff. But I tend to think that now that music is fully digital in so many ways, it's sort of it's untethered the idea that the physical experience has to be connected to the digital experience. Because, you know, with a CD, you kind of had the worst of both worlds in that you've got this little sort of dinky thing. There's not really any room for artwork. So it's still got, you know, all that. But and it could still also get scratched and like you could break it and lose it and all this stuff. So it's sort of like once you don't have to worry about the physical medium being portable or any of that stuff, you can actually choose kind of any physical medium you want. And I tend to think that there's a certain mental experience that goes along with being locked into listening to something. So like whether it's, and plenty of people will still, you know, obviously switch a record in the middle, but there's something about the fact that the default is I'm putting on a side of vinyl. Most people are going to just let it play through that, at least that side, right? And maybe you flip it or maybe you don't, but it changes the way you, I think it settles some of the like FOMO in the mind that afflicts so many people when they listen to Spotify. Cause you, it's almost, it's really hard to turn off the little voice that says, what else could I be listening to right now?
Absolutely.
Like, what else am I?
That was a mental behavior that just exploded amongst my friends in the iPod era. It was like I, hanging out with my friends in the mid-2000s, I don't think I heard a full song for years.
Isn't that frustrating, too?
It was like, by the second chorus, they were done with
right,
it.
Yeah.
And it, because here's the button. Boom. Gone.
Right.
The next one. And yeah, so you definitely don't get that when
roulette.
It comes to the vinyl thing.
And well, and you may mention of it too, like almost writing to a vinyl, like write you're writing an album. Mm-hmm. That kind of that mindset kind of went out the window with the
right.
with the presence of the iPod and all that.
And I think you know, one thing that's often overlooked in the vinyl thing is the A side B side duality. Vinyl gives you an opportunity for two openers and two closers, which I think is,
that's
you know, in sequencing, the art of sequencing, there's a bit of that got lost in the digital and CD era, too. So it's kind of cool to
no,
get back
especially
into
the CD
that,
era. But I mean, how many albums from that era just have, like, 14 or 17 songs?
So many
because
songs.
Because, like, well, just toss it on just, at the end.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
We got the space.
You know, there's an element of, like, getting your money's worth for that, but on the other hand, it's like, does this record have to be 80 minutes long?
Right. Right.
I kind of miss the fact, the one thing that CDs did have is they had that hidden song that they'd often play at the end, or they just wouldn't put it on the album, and then you'd be like, oh, song number 13? Yeah, this
which
is my
didn't
favorite,
translate
right.
into the iPod era, though, because then, like, you're
just
listening
next.
To a mix, and all of a sudden you're like,
right.
Why is there 4 minutes of dead air in this track?
You basically could not put Release by Pearl Jam in the middle of a mix because you'd have 4 minutes of silence and then that. I think the other thing about vinyl, which is that is significant.
You can have hidden tracks on vinyl, though.
You can.
Yes.
Jack White put one under the label of
what?
Of
how did I not know about that?
Yeah.
No kidding.
He put out a record that had...
Or even like Her Majesty. Like, it just it's not labeled, right?
They
just there at the end
there. Yeah.
That's a good point. You know, I remember like when I was first listening to vinyls, that's kind of what I grew up on was Cat Steven Records and you know, like Sgt. Pepper's. And I remember listening to the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds, and I remember thinking the A side of this album is so great, and the B side just has Barbara Ann, and that's all it has. And I remember thinking like as like an 8-year old like. Oh, so this is like the best side of the album is the A, and this is the B. This is what makes sense.
Sure.
What were some of the albums that you guys grew up listening to?
Oh, man, so many. My parents had a really great record collection that not only was really great, but also was already beat to hell. So so we kids were able to just screw around with them and like do whatever. So like that was a really huge part of my childhood. So like pretty much all the Beatles stuff, although there were certain records that were missing that my mom claims that my uncle stole. My uncle claims that her records were in too bad shape to even steal. Like so lots of Beatles, the first two Zeppelin records, a whole bunch of Grateful Dead, which is a huge part of my family and everything. God, what else? Random stuff.
I mean, it's stereotypical,
after,
but it's Beatles for me all the way. My mom was always just a Beatles freak, and that's like the stuff that I came up on. I actually, but recently raided my parents. I mean, my parents had a pretty small, I mean, I'm sure your parents' collection is something like yours, where it's like takes up an entire wall.
No, it was more like one crate.
Okay,
but it was pretty much all bangers.
Nice.
And one
all killer, no
and
filler.
And one Styx record that I don't know why it was in there. Nobody figured it was in perfect condition.
I love it. What about you, Hari? What's going on?
Well, when I was in high school, I was really into classic rock. WCKG was huge.
Oh yeah, yeah, big time.
And my dad had a collection of like Beatles albums. The Doors. I really got in The Doors. I know that there's mixed feelings in here about The Doors.
I have mixed feelings about The Doors.
No love for The Doors.
There's no
huh?
bassist.
I have minor love
yeah, right?
for The Doors.
As
yeah.
a bassist, how can you yeah. be a I mean, I'm a bassist too. I'm not a Doors fan.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd listen to a lot of classic rock was really, I mean, as far as vinyl goes.
Yeah, you know, I see, I mean, truth be told, Hari and I, we go back a little bit. Hari, I know that you're really into some classic rock, the Mamas and the Papas and everything like that. Like, what, were you finding more of that pop sensibility? Oh, should I not have said that?
Oh, man.
He was darting his eyes across the room at the moment.
For years, I've kept that.
I've just unearthed it. But let's talk a little bit about the sense of pop. I mean,
all the leaves are brown.
The leaves are brown.
And the sky is gray.
And the sky is gray.
I went for a walk.
I went for a walk.
On a winter's day.
On a winter's day.
I'd be safe and warm.
I'd be safe and warm.
If I was in L.A.
If I was in L.A.
California dreaming.
Dreaming
there it is.
On such a winter's day.
I want to be Thank Mama you. Cass.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys, you have such beautiful, beautiful singing voices.
That's what our mamas tell us.
That was amazing.
Packy, why do you sound so attenuated?
Yeah, what happened to Packy?
Where am I? Where the hell did you guys put me?
Well, Packy's teleported away.
You were like, hey, check out this closet. It's got all these rad guitars in it and stuff. And I was like, oh, you're cool. Then I fell into the void somehow.
Packy, we had to put you there for a reason. And now you're stuck.
I respect that. I'm upset, but respectfully.
So we are here with Packy, Brian, and Hari from I Fight Dragons. They have a show going on December 30th at Lincoln Hall. Guys, you know, it's a fantastic thing to be part of a Chicago music scene. What are some of your favorite venues to play in, and what made you kind of be drawn to the city, and what are the influences you kind of gained from living here in Chicago?
Sure. Well, we're all from Chicago as well. So in terms of venues, actually, so Lincoln Hall, which we're about to play, it's fairly yeah. new, but like, I mean, I'll let Packy speak from his closet as well. But it's just an amazing sort of for the size venue it is. Like, we've played there 4 times now, and it's just like hands down one of the coolest places to play.
It's a beautiful venue. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, man. So well built, well sort of like conceived. I mean, we've always had a blast playing the Metro too. I feel like that's, you know, it's got so much history. That's like one of the ones that you
that's
know,
like the dream gig.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That you are
yeah.
like, oh, but once I play the Metro, so anything else is just icing.
Yeah, isn't it, Packy? We're going to teleport back to the 1980s to see what you have to think about playing here in Chicago.
What do you? I don't know what this Lincoln Hall is yet. You fellas are. Yeah, no, Lincoln Hall is one of my favorite rooms to play, like, hands down, because it, to me, it sounds like a recording studio in all the right ways.
Yep.
It's so well-tuned. They have so much care about the sound there, both from the standpoint of the building, the equipment, the people running it. They really take great care of you there, and I just, I always love playing Lincoln Hall, no matter what we're doing. That's a great spot. I like Shuba's a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a classic.
You know, one of my favorite rooms, I only played there once many years ago, but Space in Evanston. Beautiful sound. It's a definitely a room for people to listen to music in and not just screw around and talk and whatever. It's a very focused environment, which is really beautiful. I just saw a CD release show by a folk duo called Bittersweet Drive. Like a couple weeks ago there, and it was just such a marvelous time. Yeah, I just love that place. Right.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like that's one of the only venues where I will go just on any night, and I'm sure that whoever's playing there is going to be awesome. Like, I've gone to see stuff there, but I've also had nights where it's like, hey, let's just go to Space. I'm sure someone great's playing.
That's cool.
That's very cool.
I was just there for The Moth.
Oh, nice. Wow. Nice.
Not band music related, but...
Not just the
still
insect
auditory.
That you just want to
yeah,
see.
He was there chasing insects.
Well, that's, you know, that's another thing that we kind of threaded through in on the podcast is the fact that, you know, you're surrounded by music so often. What are some of the things that you do or listen to when you're not playing music?
It's funny. We're here on a podcast.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
It's like the golden age of podcasting, right? Ever since Serial's come out, I'm a huge kind of podcast listener. I know Hari's into The Moth and such, which I enjoyed at a time.
Yeah, I'm kind of a newcomer to like religiously listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. I'd say Serial was a big one. I love listening to stories, right? So This American Life is one of my favorites. The Moth.
Dude, I love, did you guys listen to any of the Gimlet Media podcasts?
Absolutely. One of my favorite podcasts is Startup by Gimlet.
Oh, my God.
They're doing a really good job with that stuff.
Oh, so good. So I started listening to Startup, mm-hmm. And I've since... just started picking up, and I don't think every Gimlet podcast, because there's like 10 of them now, but yeah, like it's the quality of work done there is crazy, but it's also so cool to feel like you see inside,
right,
of the, you know, how the sausage is made.
You know, quick insight into Gimlet, our buddy from the Hudson branch who we had on the show, yeah. Matt Bowl, he's actually the music director for Gimlet Media.
No way.
He moved to New York about a year ago to work with Alex Bloomberg, and,
sure.
And he worked at CRC for many years,
nice.
and decided to make the transition. So, you know, this tight-knit community that Chicago has built really kind of spreads itself to a lot of different kind of music-y businesses. It's very cool what's going on here in the city.
Absolutely, absolutely. I also listen to a bunch of audiobooks.
Okay.
What's on the docket these days?
Oh, man. It's mostly really lame stuff, but because I listen to like audiobooks on meditation and Zen shit and stuff,
nice.
Like that.
That's great. Well, I think there's something to be said, too, about like, you know, you play music and you're playing music so much at times that you don't want to listen to music. You know what I mean? And like, so you can turn to a podcast or an audiobook or whatever.
Well, I have a correction. The first podcast I really got into, a friend of mine introduced me to, it's called Hello from the Magic Tavern.
Oh, yeah. Which is another Chicago.
Yeah, an improv podcast. When you talk about like the city and what it's known for and podcasts.
Yes.
You combine those things together. Mm-hmm. Hello from the Magic Tavern is a really like Chicago quintessential kind of podcast.
Yeah, at the Cards Against Humanity offices, I think that one is, or at least it used to be recorded at, which is another great Chicago company. Back to the 1980s, what's going on, Ted? What do you think?
Ted.
What about you? What are you listening to besides some music these days?
Oh, I like, when I do get down with the podcast, I usually do that when I have long drives, is the podcast thing. Because, I tend to be making or recording or studying music all the time. So, yeah, it is nice to kind of clear my head with some words,
right,
and some views on the world. A lot of what I do is, when I do the podcast, is comedy stuff. I love WTF with Mark Maron. I know that's one of the biggest ones, you know, for sure, especially in the field. But also, Never Not Funny. With
Jimmy Pardo. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that in a little while, but I love that one a lot. That I spent many hours on a tour van cracking by myself. And those two in particular, I do. And then occasionally like NPR shows, but just streaming. You know, like Radiolab and the occasional This American Life, stuff like that.
What was it? Do you guys remember if it was Warped Tour 2012 when Bill and I listened to the entirety of Ender's Game audiobook?
Oh, yeah. That got weird.
It got weird. Because it was like, so Bill and I were just driving, former member of the band, not on active duty, he likes to say sometimes, but we would just switch off driving because we were like really listening, you know, and I'd read Ender's Game, but it was like a really well done audiobook.
Yeah.
And so we were just like, for like 10 hours at a stretch driving across the desert, we were just like really geeking out and switching driving. It's like, yeah, on those long drives, man. So, I mean, sure. Music is always there and always wonderful, but sometimes you got to switch it up.
Yeah, let's talk about those long drives, because I know you guys have, I mean, you guys have really played a lot of places from many cities here in the United States, and you were on Warped Tour for a while. Can we hear some of those crazy stories from Warped Tour? Got any good ones?
Oh, man, define crazy. You're talking to a nerd band here. So
well, it's funny. So the way we did... When we've done Warped Tour twice. The first time we did it in 2012, we decided it would be a great idea to do it in a van and just drive ourselves. And it's really Warped Tour. You may not know, but it's routed to be done in like a tour bus. So it's all the stops are a good 8 hours from each other, and it's designed to be that like you sleep overnight while somebody drives you from point A to point B. You wake up at like 9 a.m. or whatever and start, because it's like a big day long affair. So we were driving ourselves like in a van. Like it was probably the craziest summer of my life in terms of just pure like running on nothing but adrenaline. Warm Budweiser before the show.
Brutally hot that summer, right? So if you're on like a tour bus, right, you just sit there and you can chill and like...
In 2014, we did it on a tour bus, by the way. So that's also like, we could be like, oh yes, that was much, much easier.
Wow. It's a crazy thing to be a part of. Hey,
so
Packy.
Many nights of just like 3 hours of sleep.
Oh man. Yeah, in the van. Or just like sometimes where you're like, we're not even going to bother to like hit a hotel and shower because we're only going to have an hour in the parking lot anyway.
They say Warped Tour is the hardest tour a band will go on. Warped Tour in a van is absolutely the hardest tour, I think, that a band can go on.
I couldn't imagine. Hey, Packy, how about you? What you got any good stories?
Oh, man. Well, there was a time, so we did another tour. We did another tour where we were driving ourselves, but not in a van. It was in what's now called a bandwagon. It's basically a semi-truck cab with a big Class A motorhome tour bus arrangement with thing bolted onto it. Now, the thing about this vehicle is that it weighs just under 13 tons empty, so that... you don't need a commercial license to drive it.
It's an RV, technically.
Wow.
It's an RV. Technically, it's an RV, but in reality, it's a tank that idiot fans are driving hundreds of all around the country now. So keep that in mind next time you hit the highway, especially in the summer. But one time I was driving it somewhere in nowhere, Wyoming, between or stuff, and a semi-truck in front of me went up on 9 fields. It veered like to the left, to the right, and overcompensated and all this crazy stuff, and it almost flipped over right in front of me.
Oh my God.
I was actually deciding in that split second whether what spot of the truck to hit, where I would either kill the truck driver or kill myself in the bed. It was super scary. It was super scary. And then but the truck magically righted itself, and it was everybody was fine. and then I pulled over a half mile later, and I went back into the bus area of our vehicle, and I said, guys, someone needs to take over. And they said I looked like just I had seen a ghost, and I pretty much saw all of our own ghosts in that moment. It was pretty freaky.
Well, let's go now from that tour life and that grind that you guys were on. And again, I kind of alluded to it earlier about you guys hadn't done the grind before and you had toured the country. And now you're maybe got some marriages happening. I think I saw a wedding ring, and you're working some jobs on the side. So what's the balance like between band and life now?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. So we were talking before, we'd done all the sort of dizzying highs and sad lows and creamy middles of... major label world for a couple of years there, which was a blast and stereotypical in every way, but amazing life moments. So then in the time after that, after we'd gotten off, we did the Kickstarter, but at the same time there's no longer any advances or anything like that,
right?
You've got to kind of make it work. And at the same time also, I am married. I also have an 8-month-old daughter.
See, that's great.
So,
congrats.
Wow,
There's stuff like that where it's absolutely a balance and a, yeah. and a question of sort of like the, some of the things we just talked about, you know, like living in a van and grinding it out and trying to just do that is a blast for, it was a blast for years, but at the same time, it, it does, you know, to, it gets to be more of a balance and a question as you, after having spent years do it. And I, there's folks that, you know, amazingly, I think, are sort of cut out to do that yeah. forever. And sure. they're like road warriors, and that's like the only place that they are happy and home. And that's, I respect that hugely. But at the same time, if you sort of, as you start to, you know, get on with it and get on with life and start to think that you're not as cut out for it sure. as some of those folks are, yeah, I mean, you get the balance. We've got, you know, boring jobs as well. Exciting, boring jobs. It's, okay. It's funny. I love my...
You guys are playing Lincoln Hall on yeah. on the 30th, so that's a pretty cool thing still.
I'm a software consultant. I love my... Yeah. I'm a geek in my day job, too.
Right.
Hari, what do you do?
I'm an accountant.
That's great.
Well, so you know, I've been doing this, like, right. also throughout the band, like, in the band books, on the road. Like, this was my, like... contribution to touring life was crunching numbers. So like this,
somebody's got to do it.
Right. That's good.
And I think that we're in a really good place for we're in a really good place where in our lives for where we're at with the band mm-hmm. because we still yeah. love playing and yeah. making music, but maybe you know, like living in a bus for 2 months isn't like the best situation for, sure. especially if you have an 8 month
right.
Baby at home.
It's like a quarter mm-hmm. of my daughter's life at the moment.
Yeah. So it's like we can see, we have opportunities to do gigs mm-hmm. and put out new content, but still, you know, just do our own thing too. So.
Yeah, the content you guys put out is amazing. I mean, I know that you guys have a lot of stuff going on streaming-wise and Spotify and everything. You can see their music there. Is it true that you guys were a part of the WWE for a time? I had to make mention of this.
Our song Money from our very first EP was used as a theme for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
Hey, yeah. All right. Kevin and I are a big
some residual
WWE
checks
guys.
There, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, pay-per-view. It's but it's funny. Packy got
that experience was totally worth it. like being too much money because what they also offered us were ringside tickets for
nice.
Of the taping of SmackDown, and so we went, and I think the only stop that they were making in the, you know, around the time that we were able to do it was in Kentucky, mm-hmm. Lexington, Kentucky, I think.
Yeah, it was Lexington.
Yeah, and so some of us got a front row, and we were actually right behind the announcer's table with Jerry Lawler, and it was crazy. And actually, what they did was they did a little commercial bump up thing. Promoting our song as the theme song for Money in the Bank.
Cool, nice.
Which was awesome. And then after that bump up, they did a bit where it was like, oh, and guess who's here? And they panned the cameras across the front row where the band is. And so they did that, and the camera, you know, passed over all of us, and I was wearing a Heartbreak shirt.
Nice.
I was wearing a Shawn Michaels shirt, and I was doing his... You know, his move, his entrance move, where he's flexing and he's sort of leaning to one leg and stuff. You know, being a smart ass. And then we sit back down, and my brothers are watching it, you know, live. I get a text from my little brother, who's in all caps, dude, Jerry Lawler just burned you so bad on TV.
What? What was the line? He's like, I think that guy's got spaghetti arms.
That guy's got a string hanging off his shirt.
Oh, my God.
I spent the rest of the broadcast, anytime the cameras were on the announcer's table, just meme-mugging the king. This guy so bad. You know, hoping we were maybe, like, get a little gimmick going, you know, and try to pull me over as a, you know, as a heel to Jerry Lawler, but they didn't really pick up on it. But it is available on YouTube. That segment wherein I get made fun of, and I look like such a dweeb in the first place. It's on there. It's on YouTube.
Check that out.
Yeah, it was that was an amazing experience.
That's awesome. Okay, quick round table real quick. Best wrestler on WWE of all time. Kevin?
Man, I might go Shawn Michaels. He's one of my favorites.
Shawn Michaels?
Yes.
Okay, what about you, Brian?
Jake the Snake.
Okay.
Classic.
Okay, Hari?
Oh, Roddy Piper.
He's a good one.
Okay, Packy, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I do got to go with HBK.
Yep.
I got to go with Shawn Michaels.
He's the man.
Boy.
Nice. Okay, me, Papa Shunga from the 1990s. You guys don't remember? you remember him?
Over my head, yeah.
It's a deep cut right there.
Every time I came out, he had black oil coming from his
I do remember him.
Yeah.
I do remember him.
Scary, scary guy.
Oh, yeah. Step into a Slim Jim. Is it snap into a Slim Jim?
Step. Why would you step into a Slim Jim?
Stepping into many Slim Jims. What is it like when you step into a Slim Jim?
I step into a store and I buy Slim Jims.
The federal jury has awarded former Chicago street gang member Nathan Fee.
Ooh.
All right.
Thanks, Rob.
He wanted to get in on the WWE talk.
Far out.
Far out.
Well, guys, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on the show. You know, we wanted to see, you talked about dreams before, Hari, and I wanted to see, where do you see the band going in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, this is, it's such great music, and it's such a cool thing to be a part of the Chicago music scene, and now you guys have really entrenched yourself in it, playing on December 30th here at Lincoln Hall. Where do you guys see yourself in the future?
Yeah, I mean, so that's honestly a really big question. So it's funny, I think a lot of bands, if they've gone through the whole label sort of thing that like we have, they're sort of just like done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we all still really like each other. We like playing music, and it's sort of like we're trying to figure that out. You know, what is that balance? But I mean, hopefully we've got some new ideas brewing for the new year in terms of how we can kind of keep releasing new music, because it's been 2 years since our last album, and we're we've been writing and working on some new stuff, especially the back half of this year. Got a lot of new material and sort of thinking about what's the way to put that out. We were sort of talking off the air about some of the pluses and minuses of Kickstarter and sort of the joys and sorrows. And so I don't think Kickstarter is it necessarily for what we're thinking, but there's been a lot of sort of talk amongst us about how to create something that is... That you say 5 to 10 years, you know, with an eye towards like how do we set something up that lets us keep creating, and you know, for people that want to hear our music to keep getting more of it, because we still, you know, we still love playing together, we still love making music, and it's just about kind of finding that avenue that really kind of lets us keep making that.
I love that. What about you, Hari?
Well, I'd say after that December 30th show at Lincoln Hall.
There it is.
Bing, bing, bing.
Boing. That, just write, record, do gigs. We love it. We all get along great, which is one really awesome thing about just circling back to the touring really quick, is that we all come from vastly different backgrounds musically. But yet, you know, when we go on tour, we click. We work together really well. I can see this just going until... I die.
I was going to say.
Bleep end to that.
Yikes.
Jeez.
I didn't know where you were going with that, but that got dark. In your vision, did one, like, who, did someone killing you, or?
We're all going to die.
Yeah. Well, like, are you just assuming you're going first?
Well, shit, man. Now you guys got me thinking about this.
It's got heavy.
Oh man. Well, to lighten up, Packy, yeah. What about you, my friend?
You know, just trying to stay alive and
yes.
Keep our heads above water.
Packy, we should hang out more often.
keep a firm grip on these heroin addictions we've all got.
Yeah, sure. Gotta keep those in check.
Yeah. So, but I think. I think we're in an interesting spot, and I think it's a cool spot because we're finding out how we can continue to create on our own terms. And we have a good niche thing. We've got a family of support that, you know, is ready to ride with us, whatever we used to do. And
which is kind of amazing. Like, that's a, we
awesome.
Pinch
it
ourselves
awesome.
A little bit that, like, there's people that actually, you know, want to listen to music we make, which is kind of a...
Yeah.
So, it's still a crazy thing, you know? I feel like you can't get too jaded about that.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So, like, you know, making sure we you know, do. Well, I don't know. I think we're just finding a way that we can just keep creating and making music, even if it doesn't end up being the type of setup. Like, you know, we're not a band of kids that are throwing everything to try to like get that ring.
We're a band of old men. Harry's about to die.
We're grizzled and we're pissed off and we're tired and like what we used to do and you know, so I think I picture making just a lot more records and cool stuff, both little and big, you know, eventually dying and happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Down the road.
Dying happy is the best way to go, that's for sure.
I fight dragons. Yeah. They want to die.
Happy.
Happy, yeah. Yes.
Oh, man. So, you know, guys, we can't thank you enough for joining us here at the Sound Session Studio. Go and check them out.
Try it.
Thank you guys so very much. Stay alive.
That's not
because
enough.
Because we want to hear you guys
thank
for
us
years
enough.
To come.
You're right.
I don't feel satisfied.
Yeah. Oh, man. As the cops come in, Hari's ambulance is joining us right now through the WGN radio studios. Guys, December 30th, make sure you go and check them out. Where can we find you guys online?
iFightDragons.com. Mm-hmm. And pretty much all of our social handles are iFightDragons or iFightDragons Rock in the case of YouTube, I think.
Somebody else took iFightDragons, right?
Yeah, I think it was like, for whatever reason, there was like the weird land grab at the moment, and we got like a bunch of them, but then for whatever reason, YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook, iFightDragons Rock as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, that squatter's not getting shit. we as a band, we resolved to not give him anything.
Yeah.
Unless we gave him something.
No, I don't think we gave him.
Well, be sure to go to the show. Give them all a bunch of hugs. Tell Hari that he is alive and well and just going to be keep rocking through the years. Guys,
that's
really
weeks away. We don't want to make any promises.
Just hold your horses.
We really can't thank you enough. Thanks again, guys. And thanks for joining us here on Sound Sessions.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
thanks
our
for
pleasure.
Having us.
Thank you so much.
One, two, three.
Coming to life. Whoa, oh, I can't take it anymore. 'Cause they're crazy, but maybe they're right.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter at SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram at SoundSessionsWGN.